Write that. Write that down, Fumi Saito.
Hello from Burbank, California. Once again, another episode of Write That Down, Fight Game Media Network. I am Justin Nipper. I edit for FightGameMedia.com, staff writer, WrestlingObserver.com, also work for Pro Wrestling Noah, and I'm back with Japan's leading author, historian, university sociologist, Mr. Fumi Saito. This week we are remembering former NWF heavyweight champion, the late Johnny Powers. He actually passed at the end of the year, late December. Powers was from the Northeast, but he ended up a much bigger name in Japan because of his connection to the late Antonio Inoki. So learn about where the Eagle Belt came from and more in this week's special episode called Remembering Johnny Powers. If you have not already, please subscribe to the Fight Game Media Network podcast feed on Spotify, Apple, Google Play, Downcast, wherever you usually listen to your podcast. It helps us out very much. Let's jump right in. Remembering Johnny Powers.
All right. Johnny Powers.
All right. Johnny Powers. Yeah.
The name Johnny Powers may not be as popular as he should be for today's audience, obviously. Mm-hmm. And if you Google or Wikipedia Johnny Powers, you might find the rockabilly singer, same name Johnny Powers, before this wrestler Johnny Powers. Mm. Yeah. And Johnny Powers is very important historical figure in Japanese wrestling, pro wrestling, especially with Antonio Inoki. And what's interesting is, though, that Johnny Powers, born May 20th of 1943, okay? March 20th, March 20th, 1943. Antonio Inoki born February 20th, 1943, only 1 month apart.
So already they had a sort of similar path or parallel path.
Yeah, only 1 month apart. Mm-hmm. And passing away same year, same age 79. But Johnny Powers basically retired from wrestling back in 1982 and basically disappeared, right? Never associated with wrestling people, or he didn't come to much of reunion or fan fest kind of thing, and then last time I believe he made appearance was like 2017-18. Then the past 30 years of it, he never was connected with anybody in wrestling.
And I don't know how much of a star he was nationally. I think he was more of a regional star for that time too, because outside of
when wrestling was more regional.
And TV but was different.
But he made cover of old wrestling magazine like Wrestling Review.
Sure.
Yeah. And he always had this 1970s look, like this, the curly hair, like a Brady Bunch.
And the sideburns.
Of course, yeah. So it really represents 70s, type.
70s style.
Yeah, I think so. And he was 6'4", 285-pound guy, the big guy. Very big guy. And thanks to Greg Oliver's Canadian Slam Wrestling website, that he would do the entire career, and he already written it. And Dave Meltzer emailed me and wanted to know his place in wrestling in Japan, and the Wrestling Observer will be doing this long feature on Johnny Powers. But we can talk about his place in Japanese wrestling.
Yeah, I don't know how many people realize how integral he was to New Japan and Antonio Inoki early on, and even before New Japan with
Inoki's basically Johnny Powers debuted at age of 17 and became full-time when he was 20. So it would have been 1963, right? Mm-hmm. And by then he debuted in the Ontario area, Hamilton. They moved, headed to big city Detroit, bigger you know, territory, so to speak, right? Mm-hmm. But he was basically kind of early, you know, bloomer that he was challenging Bruno Sammartino's WWF World Heavyweight title, like second year in business. And he had this power lock, basically figure four leg lock, but he called it power lock or figure eight leg lock. Same move, but gave a different name to it. And at age 22, 23, he already started promoting wrestling as an active wrestler in early 20s, but wanted to be in the promoter side of that business too. And when he was in the mid 20s, he bought Pedro Martinez Buffalo areas, you know, like promoting rights. And he was promoter for with the show with people like Johnny Valentine, the Sheik, the Bobo Brazil, the Abdullah the Butcher, the Ernie Ladd. I mean, real big name at the time. And basically ran Buffalo and the east side of the New York and upper east side, right? Mm-hmm. And on into Cleveland, Ohio.
Western New York, Central New York, Western New York into Ohio, into parts of Canada, Ontario, that whole region.
Yeah, because you're from New York, so you know, explain to me that it's not New York City, New York City, but Buffalo, New York is basically New York, but it's different culture almost.
I mean, it's the second biggest city in the state. It has its own, I mean, it's a part of Western New York, and I think the culture has more in common with states like Ohio, Michigan than New England or tri-state area.
Right.
So
not quite, yeah, right.
And but Johnny Powers was a kind of, he was a face in that area, not just in the States too, but in the part of Canada as well.
Yeah. And his first tour to Japan was October of 1966, Tokyo Pro Wrestling, the very first Antonio Inoki's, 23-year-old Antonio Inoki's first outlaw company against the establishment Nippon Pro Wrestling, JWA. And the very first tour Inoki had with this Tokyo Pro Wrestling, Johnny Valentine and Johnny Powers were the headliner, along with people like Sonny Myers. So it was very similar that Johnny Powers started promoting when he was, what, the age 22, 23. 23-year-old Antonio Inoki started very first outlaw company in Japan, and Johnny Powers on the tour. And so they crossed paths. Right. Mm-hmm. And there must be really a similar, you know, that the almost a value orientation. He was always against the establishment. Yeah. And right.
I was just going to say, I can't really think of him or even never really associate him with the NWA. He was always one of
He did challenge NWA, and also he was in AWA too. You know, young Johnny Powers against the Crusher in cage match in Minnesota that people talk about to this day.
But he never felt like he was a part of the NWA group. He always felt like he was a part
Or like a big, you know, like headliner or big, you know, territory like NWA affiliate or AWA or stuff like that. But he did travel while he was a full-time wrestler. But he always wanted to have his hands on active wrestler and promoter at the same time, that kind of person. Mm-hmm. Yeah. In 1970, he established NWF. NWF, National Wrestling Federation. It's not NWA, it's not WWF, but it's NWF. It's like a, it's really hard to, you know, come up with like a, so now you have all kinds different, you know, like a very creative name for wrestling company because there are so many. But at the time, American Wrestling Association, the National Wrestling Alliance, the Worldwide Wrestling Federation, you have to sound big, right? Mm. Yeah. And the reason NWF, you know, meant a lot in Japan was that Inoki's basically TV Asahi's Friday night primetime wrestling, world pro wrestling program, always talked about how there were four major wrestling organizations in America: NWA, AWA, WWF, and NWF. So there was like a they try to put this, fourth group, Johnny Powers' group, NWF, as like a fourth major league of professional wrestling, and made it, I mean, to me as a kid, made it sound like they're all equal. Does that sound interesting?
It feels to me, when you look back on it, you look at the Japanese fan base now, I think that there's a perception that Johnny Powers and NWF were a lot bigger among
Than it
Japanese
really was.
fans than it really
Yeah.
was. Yeah.
And because it was Antonio Inoki's signature championship belt, was that eagle belt that he held until IWGP thing. But NWF championship belt, and I think that world title made Inoki in a much bigger stir in mid-70s, early to mid-70s. Yeah. It used to be what the Ohio-based local world title thing, but what was interesting was, though, that Giant Baba would be Jack Briscoe, right, to become very first Japanese NWA World Heavyweight Champion, when NWA was the closest thing to undisputed world title, huh? But he did that with Jack Briscoe, and he did that three more times with Harley Race into early 80s, that he would win the NWA World title at the beginning of the tour, a televised match, and in about a week to 10 days later, he would drop the title back to Briscoe or Harley Race on non-televised house show at the end of the tour. And it's not on TV, so casual fans or casual TV viewers kind of forget about it, right?
Course.
And yeah, for me, like in my junior high years or something, that you wouldn't find out how Giant Baba dropped the belt back to either Briscoe or Race until following month, that when Wrestling Magazine was monthly still, and wow, Baba lost the title back, right? And it was almost let down, huh? What I'm talking about is that Johnny Powers came in as National Wrestling Federation, NWA World Heavyweight Champion, and had a title defense against Inoki in December of 1973. Inoki beats Johnny Powers clean. It's like a 2 out of 3 fall match. First match, I mean, first fall, Inoki's abdominal stretch that Johnny Powers give up, right? Then second fall, Powers lock, that the figure eight leg lock. Of course, it's figure four, but the second fall goes to Johnny Powers. Third fall, Inoki's very special octopus, Manjigatame. He really wins world title. And what's important is, though, Inoki kept the title in Japan for next 7 years. So it's not like winning American title in Japan and then it's, secretly, not a secret, but quietly drop the title back to American champion at the end of the tour or anything like that. Inoki beat Johnny Powers for NWF title, and the title became New Japan's marquee title for next seven years. It became really important. Inoki really beat this American Major League World title, and then he kept it in Japan. Does that make sense?
And it visually became like a part of the New Japan identity around that time too. Don't you
Yeah,
think
and
so?
that design of championship belt,
The eagle belt, I mean, there's so many
the gold
pictures
belt.
of
Yeah.
Inoki holding that belt, that specific belt.
And also, like second reign of Bruno Sammartino to Bob Backlund to a lot of, champions in America had a very similar design belt at the time. And
Yeah, that's right. It did look similar. The eagle
yeah, so
was a big
that's
trend. It was the motif.
Yeah, so it's like that's the world title, right? And yeah, the fact, well, now that we're all grown up, that the Inoki had purchased rights for NWF title, and Johnny Powers, as an owner of NWF, basically sold the rights to New Japan and Inoki and left the country. And NWF never promoted another show in America. Although he did come back with as a NWF North American heavyweight champion with different belt. Yeah, but never was NWF champion again. And it was really like, wow, that can happen. You know, the Japanese, you know, superstar would beat American champion in Japan and title would stay in Japan and become Japanese title, basically. And yeah, it was really exciting because, you know, same time period, Giant Baba had PWF belt, right? Pacific Wrestling Federation heavyweight title, and didn't even have this the world in it. That initially it was PWF world title, but just as soon as he joined as a member of NWA, that he took the world out of there, because the only world title is your NWA world heavyweight title, and the Pacific Wrestling Federation title just became Pacific Wrestling PWF title. And so just kind of, even as a, you know, seventh grade kid, you have to scratch your head. It's like, so NWA world title is bigger and above PWF, is that it? And so Inoki's idea was to have his world title on his TV. Does that make sense?
Yeah, and the words they used, the vocabulary they used, it was world, international.
We talked about it. It was Ricky Dozan's title, and yeah.
Right.
And WWE title was the fire, and those are very important in Japanese wrestling. Yeah.
Over in the States, I think you would just sort of accept whatever they're... You know, that's not the main issue, I think, because, you know, especially as national television brought wrestling national, we got to see different kinds of takes on it.
I think Japanese fan and Japanese TV station and the Japanese sports media always compared wrestling with professional boxing when they only had WBC and WBA. No IBF or WBO or anything like that, you know, that always WBC and WBA, those are the only two recognized world title or something like that, or the organization, foundation, federation, stuff like that. And before, actually, there's a little bit more detail to this Johnny Powers thing, that summer of 1973, before NWF title match, there was a NWA this time, NWA North American Tag Team title in Los Angeles, Olympic Auditorium. The champion was NWA North American Tag Team champion, Johnny Powers and Pat Patterson. Inoki and Seiji Sakaguchi traveled to LA, challenge its tag team title. We all believed it's NWA North American Tag Team title. Was there such title? It's okay. This is wrestling. But even Inoki, you know, 1973 and 1974, 2 years in a row, he wanted to join NWA as a membership, and went to NWA annual convention conference and applied for membership in NWA. But there's a group of American promoters that recognize Inoki, voted for Inoki to be member of NWA. There's another group, friends with Giant Baba and Dory Funk, that let's not let Inoki into this group and all this. And Inoki was denied the NWA membership 2 years in a row, 73 and 74. Interesting, huh? As big as Inoki was, there was a couple of years that he wanted to be NWA member so he could have all kinds of NWA superstars in his television. Are you following me on that?
Yeah, and I think, what do you think? Was there a kind of kinship between Johnny Powers and Antonio Inoki as far as that goes? They were both sort of on the outside.
So they went ahead and created NWA North American Tag Team Champion, title, and champion was Johnny Powers and Pat Patterson, two American stars that helped Inoki early on in New Japan Pro Wrestling. See, Carl Gotch was a booking agent for international talent for New Japan, but as good a coach and you know, the whole Korogach God of Wrestling thing was good, but he wasn't necessarily like a promoter type. You know, he couldn't book, you know, famous American superstars to New Japan ring. And Johnny Powers and Pat Patterson were close friends with Inoki, and those two helped early on in New Japan. And Johnny Powers, Pat Patterson, well, they weren't even working together, because Johnny Powers from East Coast Buffalo, right? And Pat Patterson at the time, San Francisco champion, you know, like U.S. champion. And you have that, those two, Inoki's two friends, they got together, they became New Japan creation, of course, but in, they went ahead and recognized NWA North American Tag Team Championship. And those two were original champions, Johnny Powers and Pat Patterson. And Inoki and Sakaguchi flew to Los Angeles Olympic Auditorium, had a title match. Smart thing was, though, Inoki and Sakaguchi did not win the title from them. You know, not winning makes this title more prestigious. Mm-hmm. Does that make sense?
Yeah. How so? How did it make it more prestigious if they lost?
Yeah, because Inoki and Sakaguchi couldn't beat him. Mm-hmm. That the champion must be champion strong, and it's hard to get that North American tag team title.
And this was before Inoki won the title, this
right? Summer of 1973. Mm-hmm. And Johnny Powers and Pat Patterson together, they came to to New Japan December of 1973, and had a title defense. Inoki and Sakaguchi couldn't beat him this time. But on the same tour, Inoki did win a single title, NWF title, from Johnny Powers at the end of the year, 73. Mm. One title. But later on, the probably they had a phantom title switch, that the NWA North American Tag Team Champion was two German, you know, not German American, of course, but the Carl von Schatz and Kurt von Hess. They came to Japan as NWA North American Tag Team Champion and dropped the tag team belt to Inoki and Sakaguchi the following year. Carl von Schatz and Kurt von Hess. Yeah. So German gimmick wrestler was still there. You know, Nazi gimmick wrestler was still around in the 70s. Yeah. Anyhow, so Johnny Powers was NWA Tag Team, NWA North American Tag Team Champions, and also NWF World Heavyweight Champion. So New Japan and Antonio Inoki used Johnny Powers as like a top name. Yeah. And just about every year from that point on, Johnny Powers comes back to Japan and challenges Inoki for NWF title as a former champion. Until like 74, 75, 76, until like 79. And final tour he had was inaugural Madison Square Garden Tag Team Tournament. Then at the time you already had Andre the Giant, the Stan Hansen, the, you know, these superstars. So Johnny Powers was like a slowly fading, you know, from the top spot. He later interviewed that Johnny Powers was claiming that he had about 30, 40 tours with Japan, right? I counted. It was like a 13 tours.
So
it's okay.
A little bit of embellishment, but he'd been around a couple times.
It's okay. You know, remember Dick Murdoch episode? Mm-hmm. He's been to Japan a couple hundred times, right?
Sure.
He must have felt like a couple hundred times. But when we counted, he was like a 55 tours. Mm. But that's a lot. Yeah.
It still is a lot. That's true.
Yeah. So 13 tours altogether. And 1980 Madison Square Garden Series. That's like a forerunner of today's IWGP or the G1 Climax Spring Tournament kind of thing. That what was interesting was that this Madison Square Garden Tournament 1980, you already had Bob Backlund in there, Andre the Giant in there, Dusty Rhodes in there, very first tour of young Hulk Hogan in there. You had Stan Hansen in there, people like Chavo Guerrero and Tito Santana, all these WWF associates. But Inoki still brought Johnny Powers into this, you know, package. After he signed, after Inoki signed a partnership with Vince McMahon Sr. Isn't that interesting?
So Johnny Powers was really a big part of that pre-era New Japan.
Yeah, the Vince McMahon Sr. partnership, mm-hmm. Yeah. Mm-hmm. And also NWA, it was important for Inoki to have existing American World Heavyweight title instead of creating it in Japan.
Yeah, it kind of felt like a natural or organic rivalry is what mm-hmm. I think they were going for. And I think that their paths were adjacent and they suited each other at the time. And I think it worked out.
Mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm. I can't say much more than that because Johnny Powers left the business sort of a couple of years after all this.
After that, right.
Yeah, not long
and
after.
The last tour he had was 1980, and he came back 10 years later just once. That was a September 30th, 1990. Antonio Inoki's 30 years in business at the big, you know, real big ceremony at the Yokohama Arena with people, you know, they created a little league called Greatest 18 Club. They created the championship belt too, you know, Greatest 18 Club, including Luthes, the Andre, the Stan Hansen, the Bakwinko, the Billy Robinson, and Johnny Valentine was, you know, brought in, and Johnny Powers was in it, and the judo, you know, King William Ruska, and all these people were gathered in Hiro Matsuda. They all gathered, Bakwinko, of course, gathered in the ring and took the big picture together, like a Greatest 18 Club. And Johnny Powers was in it. And for American, you know, audience, you know, I've been often asked, you know, because they recognize the photos, Andre in there, Stan Hansen in there, that the Bakwinko, the Hiro Matsuda in there, that the Johnny Valentine in there. Who is that person? Who is that person? A lot of American fans did not recognize Johnny Powers in that same photo.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, because not in the establishment, huh?
It's funny how things turn out. I think Johnny Powers ended up being quite a big star in Japan and bigger than he was by stateside fans.
Yeah, but he was NWF champion.
He was, but that's, you know, regional. I think that's regional.
Yeah, it's a regional.
And I think I don't think somebody down in Atlanta would about somebody like that.
But early 70s like a wrestling, you know, wrestling review magazine.
Mm-hmm. And, he got coverage.
You know. Yeah, not just that, but there's a ranking. Remember,
sure,
NWA
yeah.
ranking top 10, AWA ranking top 10, and WWF top 10 ranking. And right next to it, they always had for a while though. But they had NWF 10 top 10 ranking in there too. So for some people, or a certain period of time, like a 5-year period, that they treated NWF as almost equal, like a different league. And what was interesting was that before NWF, he was a promoter for like a, not just promoter, but he was like a TV producer for syndicated TV programming called Championship Wrestling. We have to explain this syndicated TV program to today's audience, huh?
I mean, it did develop over the years, but when we're talking in the 80s, when cable was part of the equation, syndicated television packages were a big part of the landscape, and pro wrestling was mm-hmm. connected to it too. Because so many different areas were offering different products that they could syndicate.
And also, you never know what part of the country or the part of the world, for that matter, that syndicated TV program pops up.
Right, not necessarily. You'd see a lot of random pieces of content from certain areas of the states broadcast in another area that doesn't have anything to do with it. It's just maybe part of
the
package,
like middle of the night. Yeah.
You know, trying to – I don't know how to – explain syndication package deals in the 80s in just one sentence.
So he was producing the TV, the you know, program as a package, and was selling to all over the country and all over the world, for that matter. You know, and it was interesting that he, you know, touched all these kind of what was new at the time. Syndication TV, that the UHF channel, mm-hmm. probably today's audience don't know that. And then cable. And then there was the closed circuit shows before pay-per-view, huh? And it's decades before your streaming, you know, on the internet. And wrestling always evolved with this media technology. And early on, Johnny Powers had his hands on those things. A lot like Inoki, it's so similar. Yeah, is what I'm saying. Yeah. And so and he was, yeah.
Correct me if I'm wrong, he even trained some wrestlers as well, isn't that right?
I believe so. With, you know, in the Toronto area with Sweet Daddy Siki.
Mm-hmm.
And later on that became part of Ron Hutchinson's wrestling school, right?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. But he wasn't all interested in training people, I don't think. He was more on promoting and producing side of it. That the, later on, he did the rock concert and other, you know, stuff. And he even promoted later on MMA show in Ontario area. And but he really was not in public eyes after he retired from wrestling. And he retired altogether in 1982. So it's been 40 years. So he just pretty much wasn't fun, you know, this past 40 years. Yeah. And it's interesting that Inoki passed, you know, October 1st of this, you know, 2022. And 2 months later, he's gone. Yeah. You know, I'm not saying interesting, but like,
no, it's, you know, it's a, why would that happen? You know, it's a coincidence. These two, and they were born around the same time and they passed around the same time.
Only one month apart. Yeah.
You know, it's funny. I didn't know until he told me tonight that, that he promoted MMA a little
yeah.
bit. Yeah. That was the same yeah. as Inoki in the late 90s as well. Of course. On a
I guess sale. Late 90s to 2000. New Millennium?
They,
oh,
they had
yeah.
some kind of symbiotic relationship. I don't know what exactly it was. I don't think it was a strong or maybe even
they
conscious
had the same,
relationship.
Same kind of antenna or something.
Something like that. There's some kind of magnetic or kinship or connection between these two. Something strong, unspoken, but clearly past that. If they're not adjacent, they're definitely crossing.
Yeah, and then also think about it. He was running NWF in Cleveland, Ohio at the time, and Inoki offered to buy this NWF title to keep in Japan. And then he basically, all right, he sold it. And in the old-fashioned, you know, 70s promoter, probably went back to, you know, States and still had the NWF title. Right, and but he kept the you know promise that he never promoted NWF world title again. And following year, there was, if you remember, Eddie Ihorn's IWA, the short lived but the national syndicated new group with Mil Máscaras as a champion.
Mm-hmm.
Johnny Powers was a part of that, you know, group too. Mm-hmm. Was always like a like fighting against this establishment, IWA, International Wrestling Association, and having Mil Máscaras as their world champion, they tried to run like North Carolina, like NWA Crockett land. And they lost the war, but always went up against the establishment. Very similar to Antonio Inoki's IWGP idea later on. See, IWGP in 1980, in 3 years in making, was that it was going to create undisputed the biggest, the top of the mountain world championship. Well, later on became IWGP title, but the idea of IWGP was to make all the existing championship belt vacant, then create only one title. Yeah. Oh, then it became another title, but it's been 40 years. But the idea of IWGP was such. That was Antonio Inoki's idea. They really gave up NWF title too. Yeah. And that created Hulk Hogan as, first inaugural champion, the tournament winner. You would think Inoki will beat Hulk Hogan to become the, inaugural winner of the IWGP tournament 1983. Instead, Inoki lost, and that made IWGP even bigger. Isn't that interesting? I mean, losing bigger or something. But the NWF title was the New Japan's, like, a it was the biggest thing, my childhood thing. Yeah, because Inoki did not defend NWF title every month or anything like that. He only, had the title match like 4 or 5 times a year, much like your boxing world champion.
Right.
Yeah, and that's like, he doesn't defend his world title that easy. It has to be worthy opponent and all super, big event kind of thing. And the first title defense was against Japanese then star Strong Kobayashi. Then Inoki against Strong Kobayashi was such a big deal, and it made NWF like world title. It's really like a world title in Japan.
Yeah, it seemed to turn into something a lot bigger than it initially was.
Yeah, I think so. And it's something Old Japan Giant Baba didn't do was that, Inoki's title, NWF title defense, they always brought the like orchestra or the live band or the big symphonies, always played national anthem before the title match. This is wrestling, but they always played American national anthem and Japanese national anthem. They had a whole ceremony, and people like Karl Gotch and Luthes come in as a witness. And the title, Inoki's title, NWF world title match looked like world title match. Yeah, and like Inoki against Billy Robinson. Yeah, only happened once, but they played both national anthem, and again Karl Gotch and Luthes as a witness at the ringside. It was the whole setup was it looks like very important world heavyweight title match.
Yeah, it was almost like the opening to a tennis tournament,
Like a
like
World
Wimbledon.
Cup something,
Yeah, World Cup, or yeah, it felt like a sports special, like if you remember back in the
And
early-ish
the
days.
announcer, TV Asahi's sportscaster announcer, not the wrestling people, but they had this network sportscaster announcer calling play-by-play Inoki's matches. Yeah, so he made it look like it's something. You're watching something really important. Really, it did.
Really enhanced the reality or importance of it.
Reality of it, yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, in hindsight, yeah, it was another wrestling title match, but those, sort of window dressing in a way was very important at the time. And wrestling was on network television, 8 o'clock prime time, and sometimes that Inoki's title defense it goes so long that they have to cut the TV program. It's like, oh, we have to go. I'll show you next week. It's like, wow. It's like, see. The little argument for wrestling haters at school or your neighborhood or your uncle or relatives that, well, the wrestling only always finish before the TV time is over. That's why it's so fixed, right? No, Inoki's title match goes overtime sometime, make it more real. Does that make sense? Yeah, live TV, it just didn't fit in the time frame that the match went, longer or something. And yeah, a lot of different things to make it look so real. Yeah, that's 70s like wrestling effort, isn't it? Yeah, but now that yeah, it's been a big news that pretty big news that today's fans, probably the name Johnny Ace doesn't mean all that much, but for
Johnny Powers,
Johnny
Ace means something different.
Yeah, when you say Johnny, I just I automatically said that he's a friend of mine. Name Johnny Powers, really just refresh childhood memory or something. That wow, he used to come over here every year, and as a former world champion, and challenged Inoki, and Inoki successfully defended his title again, but the former champion respected. And he always had the signature 70s curly hair.
Yeah, the afro.
I was like a fairly Brady Bunch hairdo.
Yes. Like Greg Brady.
And what was interesting that the TV announcer at the time, because of Dick Byer Destroyer and the Jack Briscoe's finishing move, figure four leg lock is a big thing, right? But they were calling Johnny Powers the same move, figure eight leg lock or Powers lock. So it's it's the same basic same maneuver, but it's more devastating or something.
It was always along the lines of the power lock or figure eight, NWF versus NWA. It always kind of felt like it was trying to sound somewhat similar to what the other
establishment was
were offering, but they weren't a part of it, so they had their own version, and
But the TV, it's just general TV audience is not wrestling magazine reading oriented wrestling fans.
That's true.
You know what I'm saying?
It wasn't as big of a deal. It's not like
because I learned something when I was seventh grade, eighth grade. The one January tour, Giant Baba's Old Japan had Jack Briscoe and Harley Race and Dory Funk together on same tour. Every night's NWA title match, right? I mean, that's really big deal for reading-oriented wrestling fans. On the same time, January, I believe 74 and 75 then, that New Japan had Maguire brothers. Maguire twins, like 600, 700-pound, obese twin brothers, Maguire brothers. Kids at school talked about Maguire brothers, and nobody... Really? Yeah, because something they watched on TV last night. Did you see Maguire Brothers? Oh, they are so big, right? And nobody talked about Harley Race and Jack Briscoe and Dory Funk Jr. at school. That's how strong TV was.
Hmm.
Yeah, because of course I was reading wrestling magazine, back to back to every page of it. So for me, having Jack Briscoe, Harley Race, and Dory Funk Jr. on the same tour and basically having NWA title match night after night was such a big deal. But people watching network TV Friday night, 8 o'clock, Inoki's show, they were watching Maguire Brothers. Hmm. And they talked about it. That's the difference between TV audience and loyal wrestling fans. And general TV audience is bigger, right?
Of course.
So same effect that I believe that the general TV audience watching Friday night 8 o'clock Inoki's New Japan Pro Wrestling program, World Pro Wrestling, they felt NWF and Johnny Powers was a legitimate world champion. And treated him like that too. And he didn't have, regular tours. Whenever Johnny Powers came back, it was something special, and the former champion challenging Inoki again, kind of thing.
Hmm.
And just, I guess, depends on how you produce your TV show. I learned something as a kid. It's what everybody watches on TV and how serious wrestling fan watching the show. It's like we're watching two different things.
Right.
Yeah. But the Johnny Powers brought back lots of memory, and you have to be over at least 50 to know Johnny Powers and how big of a star he was in Japan.
But he was, and he still seems to have that, resonance with a certain generation of fans.
Yeah. Yeah, because he was a champion, NWF world champion, and he was the one who dropped the title, Inoki B to become his first world championship. And yeah, it was 1973. Everybody was a kid. Yeah,
But
it was like that.
it was part
Wow.
of Inoki's
A
mythos,
big,
you
yeah,
know.
legacy. Yes, it was very much first world title. Yeah, for Inoki.
And it's the Great
And
18. The Great 18 is a big part of Inoki's what's the word I guess I'm looking for? Mystique or aura.
yeah, pretty
That's a big
much.
part of it, so
Yeah, and then in the 30-year anniversary show, he brought back all the former rivals in Andre the Giant, Lou Thesz, the Billy Robinson, the Tiger Jeet Singh, the Johnny Valentine, and Johnny Powers was in it. Yeah. He wasn't even active or he was even associated with wrestling people at the time. It was 1990, and that was the last tour already, what, 33 years ago? Oh my gosh, you know? Yeah. But yes.
But yeah, I think that wraps it up. That and it was just a couple days ago that he passed, Johnny
It was
Powers.
December 30,
This
December 30th,
I think the
December
news just
30th.
came out
Right, just
this
came out,
week, but
right.
yeah, he did pass
Because
in
wrestling people
December.
didn't really catch up on that, you know. Somebody found one of those obituary website thing that the funeral home put out, that this is where you send flowers to his family. You know what I'm saying? That was like a website thing for this funeral service, and somebody found it because his real name is what, the Dennis Arnold Walter or something, you know. And nobody, not too many people, didn't think it was Johnny Powers, the wrestler.
Right, he seemed to stay away from the business, I mean, for quite a while, so.
Yeah, and he didn't have that curly, Afro-looking 70s
That's
hairdo
right.
anymore. Right,
Yeah,
yeah,
not many
bald
people
headed.
do these days.
Oh, no, not, I mean, completely
Just
unrecognizable.
Katsuhiko Nakajima, maybe, that's it. Close enough. No,
Yeah,
just
so,
kidding.
oh, today's curly hair?
Yeah.
Yeah, interesting.
But,
But Johnny Powers was interesting character, interesting kind of, different kind of superstar in Japan.
Yeah, and if you really want to learn more about Inoki, you have to study the Johnny Powers period.
Yeah, he was an important person in Antonio Inoki's career. Yes.
And the end that how what that belt the NWF belt
Oh,
would
that,
go on
yeah,
to
Eagle Belt.
become.
Yeah.
So, yeah.
Oh, that's a signature championship belt. Yeah. It's totally Inoki's belt, more so than the IWGP belt.
Yeah, it's the belt that I envision when I imagine the picture of Inoki with that.
Inoki, yeah. And also, he was in his 30s, and I mean, obviously, Inoki's peak years.
Right, he was
Yeah.
just turning into a megastar. He was a
Yeah.
star, but he's turning into the Inoki we know.
Antonio Inoki, right.
That's right.
And same year they passed. Really, yeah,
It's a
signals
coincidence.
did. Yeah, but the end of an era.
And a Venera for sure.
Very good.
All right. So if people have questions or they want to reach out to you and ask you questions
And
about.
also that some historical figure or the historical events or particular wrestlers that they want us to go over on this, podcast, we'd like to, take questions. Yeah. And yeah, send me questions and stuff like that.
Yeah, and where
And
can
if you want to
we.
find me at Twitter at Fumihiko Dayo, FumihikoDayo, Fumihiko Dayo on Twitter, or just Fumi Saito on Facebook.
And on Twitter, I'm at Justin M. Nipper, KNIPPER. That's it for this week. Until next week, Fumi, take it away.
So long from Tokyo.
Write that down. Write that down for me, Slater. Write that down for me, Slater.